Let's turn in our Bibles together to Genesis chapter 32. And we're just going to be looking tonight at Genesis chapter 32, 33, and 34, just a few chapters tonight to consider. But I want to back up for just a little bit. There's words that we use in the body of Christ that have great meaning, and oftentimes we use these words, but we don't really understand what they mean. For example, we use the word salvation a lot, or someone got saved. I remember a woman named Dolores Hayford, she was really dear to our church in many ways and to our family in many ways. And I remember when Dolores Hayford received the Lord, she went home and told her mom, "Mama, I got saved tonight." She goes, "What did you do?" You know, because a lot of people will use these words and people have no idea. And the word salvation literally means this. It means to be delivered, to be in a situation that you've been delivered from one thing to be released into another. Then we have words like justification. You know, what does that mean? It's when God does a work in our life, and he does a work, and an easy way to remember justification is simply this: it's just as if I never sinned. When God does a work in our life, he takes away that sin. It's just as if you never sinned. We use words like righteousness. What does that mean? It means that we want to be right before God. I'll have a right life before God. And on Sunday, we looked at the salvation of Jacob. We saw God take Jacob to a place. It was a place that was known to be separated, a place to kind of get off the pathway, a place to be separated. It was called Luz, the city of Luz. And then in the dark of the evening, we'll talk about that later on tonight, it was in the dark of the evening that really Jacob was saved. And after his salvation experience, he realized that God was with him and God is delivering him. And he says, "I'm never going to call this place a place of separation. I'm going to call this place Bethel because this is the house of God." And it's an amazing thing. Well, salvation is just the beginning. There's another word we use. It's called sanctification. The word to sanctify means to separate, all right? Priests are sanctified. You know, worship centers are sanctified. You know, we sanctified this bread tonight that was set apart for holy use tonight. It was just bread when it came in, but as we prayed and, you know, it didn't become, you know, literally flesh or anything like that, but it was set apart for a special holy purpose. And the sanctification process, listen to this, it's a lifelong journey. We are continually being sanctified. We saw on Sunday, Jacob was saved, but he's sanctified till he takes his last breath. You know, I shared a little bit on Sunday about, you know, how God, you know, just does things in our life, and we look back, and we didn't know it was God then, but then we look back, and we see, wow, that really was God. I was talking about when I was a little boy around second grade, I was drowning, and a man, you know, rowing in a little dinghy, you know, grabbed me by the hair, pulled me up, and he saved me. And then I talked about, I was about 17, and I was going to a fist fight, except I didn't know it was a gunfight, you know. And again, you know, it's okay to go to a fist fight if you know it's a fist fight, but when you show up with your fist and they have a gun, it's kind of awkward. But those are things that I wasn't walking with God, but I looked back and said, wow, God really did save my life. But then after I was saved, I still needed to be sanctified. I want to tell you a story, and it's going to sound like, you know, many of you heard this story before, and I don't want you to think that I think that I was some bad person. But I did have a temper. I talked about it. And so I remember one day, I'd been on staff for about 5 or 6 years at our church. So I'm saved, obviously, but I'm sanctified continually. And I got a phone call. Actually, it was about 1987, I think it was. So I'd been in the ministry 8 years and full-time, and I got a phone call that someone was robbing our house. Now, sanctification is a what? It's a process, okay? Even preachers need sanctified, right? Well, this is the second time that our house had gotten broken into. The first time they stole a car, and while that car was being stolen, another car got blown up on vacation. Okay, that's why I don't use the word vacation. And so while we're on vacation, we bought a brand new car on this vacation. So this is about 2 months later. I pull up my brand new car, and I walk up to the back door. I always go in the back door, and they said, "There's someone at your house." And so I go to the back door, and as soon as I open up the slider back door, this guy goes running out the front door. We were being robbed. Long story, you know, it's kind of crazy, but we get in a car chase. And we went through a couple of cities. The Highway Patrol were there. The sheriffs were there. Glendora Police Department was there. Azusa Police Department was there. highway patrol officers on motorcycles are chasing us. And but when you're in a situation like that, one thing you don't realize when you're the good guy is the police don't know who the good guy is and who the bad guy is. And so finally we get in this situation where we get into a cul-de-sac, and this guy whips around and he's facing me with his car, and I'm in my brand new car. And so I pull up to him and said, I already got out one time and tried to tell him, I said, listen, I'm a pastor, don't run, I can help you. And I did, I actually said that. And I said, somebody call the police. Well, I was in Azusa, and if you know Southern California, the place I was in was the drug area. They're not going to call the police, you know, no one's calling the police. So I'm kind of stupid at this, so he just sees that, you know, I'm here, so he locks the door and takes off again. So now I'm really mad. So we get into this cul-de-sac, and so I pull up, and now we're bumper to bumper, and he starts to ram my car. Brand new car. Well, then I realized, you know, every time he would back up to ram me, I'd pull forward. And he would back up to ram me, I'd pull forward. Next thing I know, I've backed him off the street, onto some lady's yard, backed up against, she had like a little block thing with flowers in it, that kind of stuff. So, and dirt is flying and all this kind of stuff. And about this time, sanctification is what? It's a process, right? And so by this time, all these police are trying to find us because we've driven for about 45 minutes of car chase and they don't know where we are. So anyways, so next thing I know, Donald Duck shows up, and I have no idea what I'm doing, except I have him by the hair. My wife's not here, so I can see he hates it. And I'm taking him by the hair, and I'm smashing his head into the trunk of the car, you know, face down. It was a little messy, you know. But I didn't realize that the police didn't know who was the bad guy and who was the good guy, you know. And so they, you know, proceed to pull out their weapons, and I'm thinking, great, you're here to save me, though. You get down too, you know. Well, sanctification can be humbling. As I'm sitting on the curb, and they've separated us, their EMT is cleaning him up a little bit, and I'm kind of sitting there, and they said, what's your name? I said, well, my name is Brian. They said, okay, where do you work? First Baptist Church, Glendora. Oh, what do you do there? I'm a pastor. The police officer starts yelling and laughing. They go, come here, this guy tried to rob the Pope. He's going straight to hell. You know, they're having a great time, you know, laughing. And I realize I probably shouldn't have handled it that way, you know. But we're going to see in our journey with Jesus, life is a sanctification process. I'm not proud of that. I can laugh about it now, you know, and all those kinds of things. And I hope you don't think I'm trying to boast about this, because it was just one of those times I just lost it. And you know what? You're going to lose it. You really are. Hopefully not like that. You're going to go through dark times. You're going to go through great times. But we have to keep moving forward, trusting what God is going to do. And the reason I say that tonight is that Jacob, we saw his salvation experience on Sunday, but now we're going to see the sanctification process in his life, and that Jacob has highs and he has lows. There's a lot of stuff that God has to draw out of us, to bring out of us, to cleanse out of us. And we're going to see that tonight. And I hope for some of you, they'll get some great comfort, some of you some healing, maybe some conviction in some of us tonight. We'll say, you know what? I've got to let the Lord into this area of my life. Now, last week, we saw that Jacob had deceived his brother Esau. And so his father said, listen, it's not good for you to be here. Your mother doesn't want you to marry one of the gals from the Canaanites. So listen, why don't you go visit your uncle? And so he travels about 450 miles to a place called Haran. Partway there, he stops about 60 miles at the journey. He stops in a place that called Luz. He calls it Bethel when he's done. He has salvation, right? He moves on. Well, over the next 20 years, he becomes married, and he has a couple of wives, and he has a large family. BJ, can you put that up real quick? Hey, can you guys thank BJ? She's been doing this for years back there, and I'm so thankful for her. But it was kind of a, and again, the Bible doesn't just bless everything. It just shows real life, okay? That's all about Genesis. It's real life. And so we have here Jacob's family, okay? The woman that he fell in love with was Rachel. She shows up on the scene. He falls in love with her, but he wants to marry her. The problem that he didn't realize is he didn't read the fine print, that Rachel has a sister named Leah who's older, and she had delicate eyes. Ladies, if a guy says that to you, what do? Slap him in the face. If he says, oh, your eyes are like pools, cesspools. He's saying you have delicate eyes. So, but the problem is that Leah is not married, and she's the oldest daughter of Jacob's uncle named Laban. And so he works for 7 years for payment for hard work for his uncle. And he says, listen, you don't have to pay me anything, but all I like to do is to have Rachel as my bride. And so they have a celebration. And then at the end of the evening in the darkness, he goes into the tent. And he comes out the next morning. He realizes he hadn't spent the evening with Rachel, but he spent the evening with delicate eyes, Leah. And as a wedding gift, he received a nursemaid for Leah, which was a gift from dad named Zilpah. So Zilpah goes with Leah. They're kind of together. And then so he works, another total of 14 years. Finally, he gets to marry Rachel. And as a wedding gift, she gets a nurse named Bilhah. But what we see here is all of a sudden, these sisters, Rachel and Leah, go into a mating competition. You know, and so all of a sudden, Leah, who's unloved, and God sees that, gives her some children. She just starts having these children, Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. Then she kind of goes through a dry season, and during this, I don't mean that in a mean way, she can't have children anymore. And Rachel's going, this is not good. We've got to do something. So Rachel sends Bilhah in to sleep with Jacob a couple of times. And so now he has two more boys, Dan and Naphtali. And Leah goes, well, I can play that game too. So she sends in her nursemaid, Zilpah, and she has two boys, Gad and Asher. And finally, you know, after that happens, Leah's womb becomes loosened again. And so she has some more boys, Issachar, Zebulun. And then, of all things, she has a daughter, Dinah. All right? And then finally, Rachel's womb is no longer barren, and she has a son named Joseph. At this point, Benjamin is not born yet, okay? So there's 11 children, 11 sons and a daughter, and we'll read maybe tonight, probably not. Next week, we'll read about the birth of Benjamin, who's the 12th child, 12th of the boys. And so here's a little bit of Jacob's family. And so after these children are born, Jacob's been there about 20 years. He's going, you know what? I think it's time for me to move. And we talked last week, you know, how do you know it's time to move? First, you know, there's something, your heart begins to change a little bit. Your heart longs to go somewhere else. The second thing is you see that, you know what, those that you're living with, things are changing. They're not like they once were. There's a little bit of dissension with your family or maybe your coworkers or your neighbors or whatever. You don't move just because you have dissension, but if there's a continual dissension and God may be using that to move you on, you consider that. The third thing we talked about is that you'll get a direct word from the Lord. As the Lord said to Jacob, it's time for you to go back home to the land of, that's a direct word. And then the fourth thing is that God will change the hearts of those that are going to be moving with you and you'll be on the same page. Now, I'm not asking you to raise your hand and respond, but have you ever moved when your family wasn't in concert with a decision? If you've done it, you know what I'm talking about. It's the most difficult season of your life. It's better to wait until everybody's on the same page than to force something to happen. Now, there are times when our family has made a move where it wasn't so much that Robin was against it, she just really wasn't for it. And what she said is, you're my husband, kind of like, you know, Naomi and Ruth, I'll go where you go. And we moved to Reading. Robin really wasn't against Reading, she just wasn't for it. And I said, honey, this is what I believe we're supposed to do. And she has never doubted that decision. She's fully supported it, okay? But you know what I'm saying? So getting hearts right, there's sometimes submitted hearts, but you're in concert together. And so he makes his way, and he begins to move back towards the land of Canaan. And all of a sudden, he takes off, and Laban, his uncle, realizes, where's my daughters? Where's my grandkids? What's going on? And he realizes that they're leaving. And so after 7 days, he finally catches up to Jacob. And by the way, there's an event that takes place that's really important. When he catches up to Jacob, the most important things that he's concerned about is not really the grandkids. It's not even the flocks. What's the thing he's most stressful about? His idols, his gods. Now, a lot of people think that that was the issue, but the issue is, if you do a lot of study and archaeological stuff, the real issue for the gods for Laban was not so much that they were gods to be worshipped. What they were family, we might say the family heirloom, and whoever has the gods has the birthright. has the inheritance, has the ownership. Do you see who had these gods? It was Rachel. She hid them under her saddle and she sat on it. And when her daddy came in, he looked for all the, you know, he went to, you know, Leah's tent, he went to Bilhah's tent, he went to Zilpah's tent. And of course, Jacob doesn't know this, right? What is she thinking in the back of her mind? Hey, listen, if everything doesn't go well in Canaan, when my dad dies, I've got the gods, I can come back, and by our culture, I get the land, I get everything, okay? Now, what I want you to see tonight is that Rachel needs to be sanctified. These children, these boys that will become tribes, they need to be sanctified. As a matter of fact, most of Leah's kids cause great problems in the Bible. We're going to see this tonight. Dinah causes just great shame. Reuben will cause great shame. Simeon and Levi will cause great shame. But we worship a God that even if you go through great shame, there's great grace. You realize, even though Joseph is the favorite, and we'll begin learning about Joseph's life next week, do you know Joseph is not the bloodline to Jesus? Judah is the bloodline to Jesus. Now, Judah, the son, was a mess. We'll learn about his stupid thing that he does next week. But you know what else God does? Simeon and Levi, we're going to read about them in just a little bit. They did a horrible thing. They killed some people in an unjust way, and yet, later on, it's the tribe of Levi that it become a tribe that God says, hey, wait a second, these are mine. The priests come out of it. So I want you to see, even though there's great shame, there's also opportunity for what? Great grace. That's a great story for us tonight. So let's pick up the scene. By the way, we left last week where, I love this scene. Laban says to Jacob, hey, give me a high five. Basically, he says, let's do a little something. He says, let's do a high five. And they do, and they would say, high five, they say, Mizpah. Sounds kind of cool, doesn't it? Like, hey, Mizpah. What that means is, hey, Mizpah, what's that mean? I don't trust you, and you don't trust me, and God is watching you, and God is watching me. And if you violate what you just said, may God kill you. Mizpah, okay. And then we see in verse 55, it says, and early in the morning of chapter 31, Laban arose, he kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place, never to be mentioned again in the Bible. Later days, Laban. So, verse 1, Jacob went on his way. And the angel of God met him. Stop right there. I know it's going to take a while. You're going, wow, we need to throw all this. I don't know. That phrase there, the angels of God. Do you see that there? Its phrase is only used two times in the Old Testament. The angels, plural, of God. What we're seeing here is the bookend of that statement. What it means is the angel of God. God is present. Well, if it's only used two times, when is it used two times in the Old Testament? The first time it's used, we read about on Sunday, when the angels of God were ascending and descending to heaven. Angels of God. You see the angel of God all through the Bible. And what's it saying? He says, this is the gate of God, right? So now we're seeing the gate was open. Now the gate opens again. What's happening here? Jacob is being assured by the Lord again. Jacob, I know it's been 20 years. I've been with you there. I'm with you wherever you go. And as you come to this place, and Jacob went on his way, and the angel of God met him. Amazing thing. When Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. And he said, the name of this place is going to be Mahanaim. What does that mean? What does that mean? I mean, this is God's camp. Two camps. We have my camp and God's camp. The two are coming together. It's a beautiful thing. And this place, Mahanaim, we're going to learn about this place when we go through the Bible. Lots of cool things happen there later on, but we won't get there tonight. And so he's just left Laban. He's making his way back to fulfill the promise of God. And things, you know, remember when he came to Laban's house, he had happy feet, right? Well, now he's got happy feet again. All right, 20 years, I'm going home. I can't wait to see the family. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. Interesting. You know, Esau's names all show up in this verse. Sometimes he's called Esau, sometimes he's called Edom, sometimes he's called Seir. Sometimes he's called Esau, we might call him Harry, okay? Sometimes he's called Edom, we might call him Stew. That's what that means. It's a red stew. So sometimes you might call him Harry, sometimes you might call him Stew, you know. In the land of Seir, where is this? This is on the east side of the Jordan River. The problem with us, the challenge with us is when we think about Israel, we think about Israel today, right? We think about the Jordan River kind of as a dividing place, and everything on the west side is Israel, the Transjordan on the east side, that's, you know, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon. It wasn't that way. Do you realize when God told Abraham, I'm going to give you from, you know, from the Nile River to the Euphrates River, God says, I'm going to give you 300,000 square miles of land. The tragedy is, in their greatest, you know, days, they only occupied 30,000 square miles. So they only occupied a tenth. Is that be a tenth or 1% of what God promised? So the problem is, all this was God's where they are. The east side and the west side was supposed to be Israel's, okay? But the place of Seir is on the east side of the Jordan River. It's in the southern part that kind of goes down, you know, never mind. But anyways, just know they're going to be in God's promised land. So, and he commanded them, saying, speak thus to my lord Esau. By the way, I want you to see, how is Jacob addressing his brother? Speak to my lord Esau. Speak thus, your servant Jacob says, I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male and female servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight. I don't know if this is Jacob talking, or is this God preparing to hear the voice of Israel, which we'll learn about in a little bit. I think what we're seeing here is God is showing us a little bit of the heart of Jacob that needs to be sanctified. Some of you guys remember a person named Eddie Haskell. It was a television character. Some of you guys, most people have no idea now who that is, but you know what I'm talking. There's a little bit of Eddie Haskell in Jacob. And right here, you know, he's trying to honor his brother. And he says, hey, listen, because by the way, what was the last thing that his brother said to him? The next time I see you, I will what? Kill you. You know, after 20 years, you still remember those words. And so here he has to go back. And part of the promise is, you know, blessing. But there's also problems with the blessing. You got to deal with brother Esau who wants to kill him. So he says, hey, listen, as we get closer and I've chosen to go the route, and there's different ways that they could have left the north to come down to the south. They could have stayed all the way to the west, and he knew that Esau was on the east side, but he chose to come down this eastern route, and he knows there's an opportunity I might run into my brother Esau. And so when I see him, I need to honor him and let him know what God's done. Well, then the messengers returned to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he is also coming to meet you, and 400 men with him. That's all they said. They didn't say 400 angry men. They didn't say 400 happy men. They didn't say anything. It's 400 guys. Isn't it interesting? Even though we have the promises of God in our life, we still deal with fear, right? Unrest. Our mind always goes to the negative first. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. It means that, you know, he had incredible fear, and he was pressed from the inside. He's just, oh. And so he divided the people that were with him, the flocks, the herds, the camels, into two companies. Now what do we see happening? Jacob is back to being a cunning man. He's trying to help God out. And so he puts a plan together, and he says, if Esau comes to one company, attacks it, then the other company, which is left, will escape. You know, 50-50. Let's see what's going to happen. Then Jacob does something. You know, Jacob is a man of faith. And may I encourage you, when you're in your faith journey and you come to fearful situations, listen to the prayer of Jacob. Listen to what he does. And if the enemy's trying to steer that faith promise that God has given you, listen to the prayer of Jacob. Jacob was greatly afraid. He thought, man, I could be killed here. If my brother attacks me, half of me could be wiped out. So then Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. You know what I ask you to do? Pray the faith promises out loud. Speak it out. God, you said, and tell him what he said. But then we see something in Jacob's life. This is a part of the sanctification I want you to see. This is what it means. This is how God, you know, sets us free, sets us apart. Listen to what Jacob says next. He says, I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies. I love that. You know what Jacob finally says? God, I realize what I really, really deserve, and you've not done that to me. In some ways, I'm a white-collar thief. When I gave my brother that Edom, that red stew, I'm still a thief. When I lied, I'm a liar, God. I lied to my dad and said, yes, I'm Esau. Father, I got what you asked for. I'm a liar. And he finally gets this. He says, Lord, part of the sanctification is coming to the place where you realize what God has not given you that you deserve. And then we see God's grace in that he gives us things we don't deserve. Amen? Amen. But here he says, listen, I'm not worthy of the least of all the mercies, of all the truth which you have shown your servant. For I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I've become two companies. God, I remember when I started on this journey, I was running for my brother. All I had at 77 was my staff. Now here I am at 97. And I have companies. I have all this stuff. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. I love his honesty. God, for you said, look at verse 12. Tell God what he said. For you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. Lord, when you said that to me 20 years ago, I'm 77, I'm saying, I'm going, I don't have a kid. But now I've got kids. I've got a daughter. I've got boys. I've got just an abundance. I see what you've done. And you said that you would do this. So we lodged there that same night. And he took what came to his hand as a present for Esau, his brother. This present is huge. Esau is about to receive something, a gift. It was when you gave someone a gift, it was a tribute gift to say, you know what? I honor you. I recognize you're superior to me. If you were in someone's property and your cattle were grazing, your flocks were grazing, you say, listen, I honor you. This is your property. Here's a gift or tribute. It's a way of blessing. But yet, sometimes gifts can be given, and there's still a little bit of Jacob in us that needs to be sanctified. He's thinking this thing out. And by the way, can I say this? God does his greatest work when? In the night or the day? Oftentimes in the day. God does his greatest work in the darkness of our life. But wait a second, gang. There's not just one dark night in your life. There's many dark nights in our life. The sun comes up, the sun goes down. The sun comes up, the sun goes down. The sun comes up, get used to it. The older you get, you know what you realize? I can't wait to be in heaven. But there's dark days in our lives. It's not just a one dark day and then you're done. And so he lodged there that same night, and he took what came to his hand as a present for Esau, his brother. What did he give him? 200 female goats and 20 male goats. What's he saying? I'm giving you both sides. This flock will grow. It will multiply. I'll give you 200 ewes and 20 rams. I'll give you 30 milk camels with their colts. I'll give you 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10. I'm going to give you 550 animals. This is just a gift to you. Tells you how much he had, right? This isn't all that he had. I mean, this guy was really blessed. Well, then, as these came together, he gave them to the hand of his servants, and in every drove, okay, the herds, they drove by itself, and the servants and passed before him. And he says, now listen, let's think this out. Let's put some distance between these droves, between the camels and the flocks. You know, just kind of, I want to really impress my brother. And he commanded the first one, listen, when you lead this drove first, maybe it's the goats and, the male and female goats. He says, listen, when Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, saying, to whom do you belong and where are you going and whose are these in front of you? Then you shall say, they are your servant Jacob's. It's a present sent to my lord Esau, and behold, he's also behind us. Your brother's coming. And then he said to the second, the third, and all that follows, listen, say the same thing to my brother. Why? Verse 20. Behold, your servant Jacob is behind it. For he said, I will what? Appease him. He's always trying to help God out. When God gives you a promise, he doesn't need your help. He does need your faithfulness to keep, that he'll keep his promise. But he says, maybe I'll appease him with the present that goes before me, and then afterwards I'll see his face, and perhaps, maybe he'll accept me. So the present went over before him, but he himself lodged that night in the camp. And again, he's going to a time of darkness. God does great work in darkness. So he rose that night, and he took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and they crossed over the ford of Jabbok. Okay, so they're on the east side, they're a little bit north of Jerusalem. And he took them over the brook, and he sent over what he had. So all the flocks and the wives and the kids, they're all over there. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. You know, some of the best times of darkness are when you're by yourself. Don't you agree? Just good stuff. You know, Sunday we were sharing about the memorial service we're going to have tomorrow. And my wife has been out of town. She'll get home tonight about 11 o'clock. So I have to get done here quickly to clean the house up. But I was just by myself Monday morning. I thought, you know what? I really need today to be by myself. So I just went up to the mountains. I went hunting and fishing, golfing. Hunt for my ball and fish it out of the water. But I was all by myself. There wasn't another guy in the golf, just a guy cleaning, turning the water and that kind of stuff. And I needed that. And the first 9 holes was just a lot of hunting and fishing. But on the 18th hole, it's like the Lord just opened up. After I'd spent a couple hours, about 3 hours, just kind of just thinking, processing, and then just listening, not asking, just listening. He just dumped all kinds of cool stuff in my life. We need to get away in dark times and listen to the voice of God. And so Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. It was a long night for this guy. We'll talk more about this on Sunday. We're just going to read through it right now. Now, when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip. Who's the he here? Jacob. When talking about Jacob, his name is the him, small capital. The he is talking about this man. Most people, and I agree with them, is probably a Christophany. It's Jesus in the Old Testament showing up. But so he's wrestling, and he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. Has anybody ever had this happen to them? I have. It's the most painful thing that'll ever happen in your life. When your hip socket comes out, I remember what happened to me. My parents had gone away, and this is in the days when you didn't have permission slips, so they just left you with a babysitter and went away for like 3 days. And they had just driven away, and I remember I was out playing hide and seek. And I was running and I was jumping over some hedges. And when I came down, it was wet and I slipped. And the way it was, and my hip popped out. And they couldn't do anything. They gave me baby aspirin until my parents would come. They'd drive back. It took hours for them to get back and then pop it back in. But it's unbelievable. The pain is beyond anything you can imagine, okay? If you've had a hip pointer, take that and add 10 times to that and you know what it's like. And so here he is, his socket, it popped out. And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. But Jacob, he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And he said, well, what is your name? And he said, my name is Jacob. And he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. Why? For you have struggled with God. You've wrestled with God and with men, and you have prevailed. What does that mean? You've overcome. You've lived through it. The name Israel, it has many different meanings. Probably my favorite meaning, when I use the word Israel, I like the meaning, it means governed by God. You're governed by God. He says, man, you've gone to battle with God, you've gone to battle with men, and you've lived through all this. You used to be a heel catcher, but now you're a man governed by God. Wow. You struggle with God and with men and prevail. Then Jacob asks, saying, well, tell me your name, I pray. Why? Because a person's name often defined their nature. Isn't that true with Jacob? Even his brother said, you know, that dad, that guy is such a creep. It's a good thing he's called Jacob because that's what he is. He's just a heel catcher. And he said, what is it that you ask about my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of that place Penuel, which means, for I have seen the face of God face to face, and my life is preserved. Well, just as he crossed over Penuel, the sun rose and he limped on his hip. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle that shrank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip in the muscle that shrank. Okay? So, if you're here for our Passover or Seder service, you know, there's certain portions of the lamb that we will not eat out of honoring this passage. Okay? Well, Jacob lifted up his eyes and he looked, and there Esau was coming, and with him 400 men. Now, listen. He needs to be sanctified. He's still thinking, what can I do here? How can I take care of this? You got to love this guy. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. These women really put up with a lot. I want you to put yourself in Leah's position, in the maidservant's position, and then Rachel's position. He put the maidservants and the children in the front. It's like, oh, great. We're the first to get killed. Then Leah, oh great, you know, my delicate eyes. And then her children. And then Rachel and Joseph, last. They were the favorite. It's like, you know what? If they kill the first 10, at least I got Joseph and Rachel. Then he crossed over before them. He bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. Now what's he doing? He's not just telling his brother, I honor you. He's what? Showing his brother, I honor you. Maybe one of the ways God will heal some of the hurts in your life with people that hate you is that instead of just staying away from them, you should begin to honor them. First with your words, and then with your actions when God gives you opportunity. Here's the only positive thing we're going to read about Esau. But Esau ran to meet him, embraced him, fell on his neck, kissed him, and they wept. 20 years later, Esau's going, hey, that's just dust in the wind. You're my brother. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and the children. He said, who are these with you? And she said, well, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. Can you imagine? You know, he's going, dude, you were 77. You were single. Who are these kids? You're 97 now. These are mine. Probably said a little pride. I'm the man now. You know, you were the man before, but I'm the man now. Look at these gals. Look at these kids. But actually, it's not me, it's God in me. Then the maidservants came near, and they and their children, and they bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children, and they bowed down. And afterward, I'm sure right about now, Jacob's just beaming as Joseph, the little guy, comes up. He's a little guy at this point. He comes up, and his mother, Rachel, and they bow down. And Esau says, what do you mean by all this company which I met? He said, well, these are to find favor in the sight of my Lord. But Esau said, I have enough. I have enough. Keep what you have for yourself. Isn't it interesting? God already had it covered. Are you seeing this? We don't need to help God. We just need to believe God. We just need to be available for God. Every time it seems like someone's tried to help God so far in Genesis, it's backfired. You know, Hagar backfired. And we just go all through these things. You know, backfire, backfire, backfire. When are we going to get it? Just trust God. Believe him. Let him do the work. And so he says, no, please. If I found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand as much as I've seen your face, as though I had seen the face of God. And you were pleased with me. Please. Take my blessing that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough. So he urged him and he took it. That was huge to Jacob. Why? When Esau said yes to that, what he was saying is, the past is the past. You don't ever have to worry about me killing you ever again. But he wasn't saying this because he wanted to. He was forced to by his actions. You see that? Jacob was kind of pushing him into a situation. By the way, Jacob was really clever here, if you think about this. By giving him all this stuff, think about what was happening. He's going to weight his brother down. By receiving all these animals, 550 animals, it's going to cause him to be really focused on now these animals he didn't have. He's also probably going to receive some of the servants to help get these animals where they're supposed to be, which means if Esau changes his mind, some of Jacob's servants are with him, and they can also be, wait a second, I don't know, remember what Jacob gave you? You see what's happening here? There's a lot more to this when you think about it than just, hey, be blessed. There was some cunning stuff in here that God needed to sanctify in Jacob's life and my life. And by the way, your life also, I would guess. We're not there yet, gang. Oh, we're not even going to get to chapter 34. But anyways, let's go. And so, let us take our journey. Let us go. And I'll go before you, verse 12. But Jacob said, no, my Lord, you know the children are weak. The flocks and herds which are nursing are with me. And if the men should drive them hard, one day all the flock will die. Ah, please, let my Lord go on ahead before us. Sir, I'll lead slowly at a pace which the livestock go before me and the children are able to endure until I come to my Lord in Seir. I know where you live. I will meet you down south. Seir is almost down to Egypt, okay? It's way south of the Red Sea. It's down by, it's the northern part of the Red Sea if you're looking at a map. You have the Sea of Galilee, the Dead Sea, then the Red Sea. You know, anyways, it's a ways down there. So, he says, please, let my Lord go ahead. I'll meet you in Seir. And Esau said, no, let me leave with you some of the people who are with me. He said, no, what need is there? Can you just hear a couple of Jewish guys? He said, what need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. And Esau returned that day and went to Seir. He went south. But listen to this. What did Jacob say? Go ahead. I'll come down to Seir and I'll see you. See you at Seir. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth. What direction is Succoth? If you're looking at them, it's north, northwest. He's heading back toward Haran a little bit. And what does he do? He built himself a what? Is that important? Kinda. What should he have put? Should have built a what? A tent. He gets back to tents in a little bit, but he builds a house. What's he saying? I'm going to hang out here for a while. And he made booths for his livestock. And the word Succoth means booth. We have the Feast of Succoth right now. It's taking place in Israel. That's where they come to Jerusalem and they surround the temple. And they build these booths. And there's a great celebration. I don't have time to go into it, but it's a great time. It goes back to this. Therefore, the name of the place is Succoth. And then it gets refined later on. Well, then Jacob safely came to the city of Shechem. Now, so he travels, instead of going south, he goes northwest, but then he decides to cross over the river, the Jordan River, and now he's heading east. And he comes to the city of Shechem. That's the place where Abraham camped at when he first came from Haran before, you know, he became Father Abraham, Father Nate, when he first came, you know, from the Mesopotamia place. So he's over there, which is in the land of Canaan. And when he came from Padan Aram, he pitched his what? Now he's back on track. I'm just pitching my tent, okay, before the city. And then he bought the parcel of land which he had pitched his tent from the children of Hamor and Shechem's father for 100 pieces of money. And there he erected a what? Altar. And there called it El Ole Israel. Wow. We don't have time to go any further. I really thought I was going to get to 34, but this is just a tease for next week. You see the man says the children of Hamor? I know there's little ones here. I'm not trying to be cute, but the name Hamor means donkey or ass. And I'm not trying to be clever, but that's exactly what he is. He's like a donkey. He's stubborn. He wants his way, and his kids turn out to be that way too. We're going to see next week why the Lord said, I don't want you to get involved with the people of Canaan. I don't want you to get along with the way they do business. And you'll see they're pretty crafty, you know, and some terrible things happen. Father, thank you for tonight. I know that we didn't get through what we thought we'd get through, but I pray that I was faithful to share what you wanted to share tonight. And that as we go through our dark times and we go into the night sometimes, like Jacob, we're just kind of crafty and cunning. May we come to the morning being governed by you, God. That we would wrestle with you, so to speak, and have time with you, and knowing that really Jacob wasn't wrestling with you, you were wrestling with Jacob. I think he'd already had enough opportunities to wrestle with Laban. He wrestled with his brother Esau in life. And I don't think he felt like being a fighter that night. But yet there were some things in his life that needed to be sanctified in the darkness. And Lord, when he came out that next morning, he was a different man. But Father, what I love about you is your patience. You call him Israel here today. And then in a couple chapters, you'll say, remember, I called you no longer Jacob, but you are Israel. Live like it. Let me govern your life. Lord, do it again in our lives. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.